Of Doug.
And have a long talk with him.
And they love him.
Good morning.
It's all up.
This is June the 25th and is the last meeting of this, formal meeting of this subcommittee, although we are going to meet next Tuesday at 9 o'clock for a little
get together.
Thank you party up in the second floor house conference room.
Wow, this committee goes all out.
9 o'clock.
Cool.
Is that like a PM or an AM?
There'll be, it's AM, 9 o'clock.
Bring your own breakfast?
No, we will have something, some food and coffee and presents.
Wow.
So.
Does that mean I have to give a present for somebody?
No.
No.
No? Oh, good.
Actually, it's nicer here, you know, because if you're the vice chair.
Yeah.
Okay, open public here, a work session on House Bill 3063, Krista.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3063, the bill appropriates $3 million general fund to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for a grant program to community colleges so that they may increase the number of underserved, low-income, and first-generation college-bound students who enroll in community college and make progress towards a degree or a certificate. We have today a dash 4 amendment, which is the LFO recommended amendment. It contains language from the dash 1, which adds foundations for community colleges as a permissible organization for which the grant monies may be distributed. And it also changes the appropriation from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission.
Questions? Representative Huffman.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I'm a co-sponsor on this and very supportive. I think it's a great program, but I do want to reiterate that, and I know there's going to be work done on it, complementary to another bill, but if we had been able to develop a plan this session to deal with the alignment of everything, we could have put together a plan to deal with fifth plus year and all things community colleges, created the alignment, the funding mechanisms, and if you combine $3 million here and $7 million there and $10 million there and $19 million there, before you know it, you got some real money to actually develop an aligned comprehensive program. And I'm saddened by that work not getting done, because we're continuing to deal with silos. Great programs,
yeah.
Not knocking the programs, but we could have had alignment and a more comprehensive program. And I hope we can work toward that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll all be on interim committees, and hopefully we'll have that kind of discussions and activities. That's why we now have annual sessions. So if we can complete that work, perhaps we can act on it in February. Anything else? Madam Co-Chair, on the dash 4 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3063.
Questions? Any opposition to the motion? And Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3063 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Any discussion? Any questions? Any objections? And carriers, Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Sure.
You have to take it to the full and the and the floor.
Have to.
And to the Senate. Well, Chuck, do you want this one?
Sure.
I'll yeah, go. Senator Roblin's been monopolizing all the Ways and Means
been loading
Committee.
Him up, you know.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to say no again.
Senator Thompson to the full Senate.
Okay.
After it passes Ways and Means. Okay. Let's close the work session on 3064. Open a work session on 2928.
Close the work session 3063.
Didn't I just do that?
64.
64.
Details. -4.
He knew what he meant.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2928 establishes a 15-member task force on class sizes to determine appropriate class sizes, identify methods to reduce class sizes, identify costs for methods to reduce class sizes, and report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15, 2016. The measure overall is indeterminate, but we're assessing a minimal fiscal impact to it depending upon how many times the task force meets, and there are no proposed amendments.
Okay, questions of Krista. Senator Thompson.
I can save this task force a lot of time.
Really?
We need to reduce our class size, and you can do it either by reducing the amount of kids or increasing the amount of teachers. So they're going to spend 6 months and figure that out.
Okay.
I'll be a yes on this one.
Additional comments or discussion? Madam Co-Chair.
I move House Bill 2926 with the task force.
2928.
2928. With the full task force to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion on the motion. Any objections to the motion? And Madam Co-Chair, who wants to carry this one?
I'll take it to the full. And Representative Taylor, you want to take it to the floor?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, and
I have my pony ready. I'll take it.
Thompson will carry it to the full Senate.
One sentence, that's good.
Well, he's been goofing off all year, so we've got to work him.
Yeah. If he wants a final grade in this class.
Close the work session on 2928 and open a work session on Senate Bill 81. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 81 is the waive tuition community college bill. It's a bill that's been under construction for quite a while. There is an A11 amendments which replace the entire bill. So that is the recommended amendment. That amendment establishes the Oregon Promise Program, which will be administered by HEC, Higher Education Coordinating Commission. A student is eligible for a grant equivalent to the waived tuition cost under this bill for courses at a community college in Oregon if a number of criteria are met. The criteria includes the courses taken by the student must be required for the curriculum for the completion of a one-year curriculum for transfer to another post-secondary institution, an associate's degree, or a program certificate in CTE or career technical education. The student must have been a resident for 12 months. He's reached his highest level or otherwise graduated from high school or met the equivalent within 6 months of enrolling in the first term under this program. He or she has an accumulative average, grade point average GPA of 2.5 or higher, has completed the free application for federal student assistance, well known as the FAFSA, for each school year that he or she are applying for the waived tuition and has not completed more than 90 credit hours or its equivalent. The student has to maintain a 2.5 GPA during the period that they're enrolled in the program, has to make continued satisfactory progress toward completion, and enrolls in a sufficient number of classes to be considered half-time. The grant amount or the waivered amount will be calculated. Each student must pay $50 a term, and then the grant or waiver is calculated to being at least $1,000 or the actual cost of tuition and not more than the statewide average community college tuition or cost or the student's cost of tuition. And the grant can be prorated downward if he or she is not a full-time student, but at least must be a half-time student. So that is generally the requirements of the program. The total amount of grants is limited to $10 million per school year or per fiscal year, and there is $10 million appropriated in this amendment, of which about $438,000 will be used by the agency to set up the program, establish it, work with the community colleges, set up the necessary IT work that goes with it, and a limited amount of marketing in the program in terms of reaching out to high schools. And so that is the summary of the bill, or the amendment.
Questions? I would like to have Andrea and John come up.
In person works.
Welcome, Community College people. Have you reviewed this language, and do you have any comments?
Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, and we worked extensively on these amendments to try to meet the concerns of community colleges in this bill, and we are now neutral on the bill with the result of the Dash 11 amendments.
They worked on it and worked and worked and worked, and now they're neutral. Good.
For the record, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association. I have nothing to add.
I think she covered it.
Senator Roblin,
my boss.
You know, we're going to vote on another bill a little later. I appreciate the work that they have done on and creating a spa with some money to work on accelerated learning kinds of things. And I just want to put on the record here that I think that some of that resource may be able to be used to help as we implement this program. And I'm happy we've got to that conclusion on this other bill, because I think having the resources to make it work and to make sure that the colleges are ready to help these kids that are coming be successful is really important. And so having some resources available to help make that transition is also important. And I just wanted to put that on the record. And I appreciate the hard work that the community colleges have done to get to the place they are.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know Doug went over some numbers and stuff, but while we've got community colleges here, Senator Roblin said resources available. So I just want to make sure that, because every session I fight and usually lose half the battle on bills that require community colleges to provide free classes to some population. And it's very unfair for us to, you know, continue asking without additional funds to give somebody a free education. In this bill, are you being fairly compensated? That may be too strong, but are you being compensated so you're not being asked to provide free classes for yet another population, and probably the largest population of any of the bills that we've dealt with the last 8 years?
So, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Huffman, the Dash 11s have some significant changes from the original bill. And that was one of our concerns in the original bill, was that it mandated just a waiver of tuition and then we might get reimbursed. The bill has been changed extensively, so the program is now run through OSAC. And so as part of the financial aid packages that students will receive, they will get the tuition waiver as part of their financial aid package. So the colleges will not be on the hook if there's not enough money available for the waivers. That was very important to us. The second piece in terms of capacity has not been addressed. That is something that we have been concerned about, but because this is a limited amount of dollars, it's only $10 million, it may not have that capacity impact that it would have been were at a much larger program. I think that remains to be seen, and as we come back into the next legislative session, if there is a capacity issue, then we will bring it back to discuss that with you. The third piece is really around making sure there's advising and wraparound services for those students to help them succeed. There is a companion bill in 418 that has $7 million that will be put in eBoard, pending a further conversation with us and the universities in K-12 about how we can best use that money to support students.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
To the capacity issue, part of that, not all of it, but part of it's going to be qualified, certified instructors. Are we comfortable with where we are on that issue? Did we get some resolve on who's going to be teaching the students for the college credit?
So, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Huffman, the way the bill is currently put together, that issue has not been addressed, but it really is about that smaller amount, that $10 million for that free community college tuition with that wraparound services. Because this has been put together at the last minute, we don't have all the answers yet in terms of how that money can best be used, and that's why the decision was made to put into e-board so we can have that conversation, because we just can't necessarily do great policy in the last couple of days of the legislative session.
Really?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Of course, we're going to want a report as soon as you have any information on how this is working and what glitches might be and what adjustments might need to be made. Once again, that's why we meet annually now, to be able to do that. It seems like every legislative session there are bills that are passed that need a little tinkering later on. This may be one of those. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to share the appreciation that started in the Senate Education Committee, and I don't even know the people that were all involved in the last two and a half weeks to look at this. And knowing that we got to a dash 11, I know that there were multiple changes, obviously, and suggestions that were hopefully taken to heart by everybody in the process. And I thank you and all the people on this dais that worked on this to have in front of us today. It's quite a miracle. So thank you.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As I go through this, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, so as I go to, and we're really only talking about the amendment, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, dash 11.
So as we go to page one of that, it says students, to qualify, students need to sections 3 and 4. And so I read this criteria. Enrolled in courses, and the one question I have is determined by the office in accordance with rules adopted by the HEC. What will there be additional rules that the HEC will put in place added to what is delineated here?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Springer, possibly. One of the pieces in crafting this is we try to give HEC fairly wide latitude to work with the colleges and K-12 around putting together the rules in terms of how this will actually work. Because we were putting this together in the last couple of weeks, there may be things that we have not yet thought of. And from our perspective, one of the key questions is how are we helping students to succeed and complete? And we wanted to make sure that HEC had some flexibility so that as we look at this program, if there's additional ways that we can do it that's going to help move students through from high school into the community college, that they have that flexibility to do that. Certainly there's reporting back to the legislature as we go forward in this process, but we wanted to make sure that there was that flexibility to think about how to really make this program work.
Representative Springer, Mr. Cannon's in the audience if you have direct questions for HEC.
Well, I think that probably gets a little bit to what I'm wrestling with here. I'll just ask the obvious question then that I'm not yet able to to specify here is, so most or all students will be eligible to apply to this, for this, right?
Co-Chair Monroe.
I mean, there's the criteria of graduation and GPA and those kinds of things.
So $10 million is not enough to cover all students statewide. And so our recommendation as we were putting this together, that HEC had the ability to target that, And they may specify certain school districts or even down to the high school level in terms of putting the program together. An earlier draft, it was a first-come, first-served program, and so it would be available when the money was out, the money was out. And our concern was we want to make sure that it's not thin to such an extent that it's not, that it doesn't, it becomes meaningless. And so there's some mechanisms in there where HEC can take a look at that and put some further parameters around it to make sure that it actually benefits students in a way that moves them forward. It's not going to cover all students in the state. There just is not enough money to do that.
Representative Springer.
I feel like I'm being incredibly dense this morning, and I mean that in all earnesty, because as I read the amendment, which is the law we're voting on,
yeah.
I realize there's a rulemaking process over here. I look at this and I think, my son qualifies. My son qualifies. And so I'm thinking, okay, we're stressing writing big checks. We filled out a FAFSA to find out the government said we can afford college, but that was a process to access some other scholarships. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, heck, why are we paying for Eastern Oregon Community College when maybe there's a chance that we can make him do this and get college paid for? But yet I know that there's this rulemaking nebulous process out here. How do I put these two pieces together? So, and I'm thinking Eastern Oregon should be saying, ooh, we might lose a student that's going to be paying.
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Springer, the program will go into effect a year from now, so it will not be this fall. It will be a year from now.
I'll make him wait. So,
well, you have to graduate.
It's a lot of money.
Within 6 months, so it will only be available. Excuse me. It will only be available starting for those that graduate a year from now. We still have unknown questions about this in terms of how it should put together, and that's really why the implementation is put out a year, so that HEC can promulgate rules, can take a look at this, we can come back into the next February session if there's changes that need to be made, so that we can hopefully create a program that works.
Go ahead.
So would it be fair to assume or guess that the rulemaking process would unfold in a way that some kids that... First of all, this isn't about our family. We have a plan. We're going to execute the plan. And the plan was not devised by me. And I want to honor a plan that a senior has built. But I'm looking at that and I'm saying, this has got to be built in a way to exclude him. I mean, I would think it has to be, because you can't afford to pay for everybody. So who is it we are going to target?
Yeah, I think the question is there going to be some kind, or is there potentially going to be some kind of a means test where...
Well, actually, no, the question is who are we going to target?
Yeah. So anybody want to try that, or should we get Mr. Cannon up here?
That might be a more fair question for Mr. Cannon.
Yeah, I mean, I would just add some of that. I mean, we'll have the remains to be seen and will be done by the HEC. And if you look at the way the bill is set up, it would be more around targeting high schools and districts rather than cutting out specific sections of students. And I can't speak for the HEC, but I think presumably they would probably look through the lens of moving toward 40-40-20 and things like that, and what gets students who might not otherwise have been going to college into college. Which was also why the connection to Senate Bill 418 was sort of made. And while some of that policy work remains to be done, and that was part of the reason for the connection, to sort of create a link that would help us move students who wouldn't otherwise go to college to college. But again, I don't want to speak for the HEC, but I would think those would be the sorts of criteria that they would be looking at.
I'd love to hear from the HEC on that.
Yeah, we will in a minute. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on our work, the lens will be 40-40-20, because I'm insisting that everything we do, if we're going to have 40-40-20 in statute, that needs to be the measuring stick. So that being said, all students will be a target. The reality is that not all students will take advantage of it. You know, because we're probably never going to really hit 40-40-20 exactly, because some students just aren't going to do it. There are going to be other students that mom and dad went to U of O, they're alumni, it's in the DNA, that's where we're going. And or Michigan State, you know, it's just that's where they're going to go, and they're not going to take advantage of free community college even if it's offered, because that's just not what that family does. So I think everybody may be targeted, but certainly not everybody's going to fall under that and take advantage of the program. And financially, as I've said, there is a huge pot of money if we can get, you know, OEIB spearheading the alignment on this and getting this done, because I brought up the question over the weekend with the co-chairs and the co-chairs here. I said, you know, if we're going to do free community college, another sacred cow pot of money that nobody has brought up is the opportunity grant, and how much of that opportunity grant that would have gone to community college students could actually be taken and put in this bucket along with all the other silos of money that really could fund a substantial and comprehensive program.
And one of the other aspects of this, Chair Comp, Representative Huffman, is by getting more students to fill out the FAFSA, and we will most likely be bringing in more federal dollars that pay the student side of the cost of the college. But that's, you know, it's good for the state generally to bring in more federal dollars, and
we
hopefully
like
this will have
dollars.
That effect. Yes, we do.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I apologize if I missed some of this before, but one of my concerns about this proposal is mostly that we are going to attract the kind of students that we claim to want to support. And I know that the advocates, when they talked about this, talked a lot about opportunity students who are 18 to 24. But not only in earlier versions was it the folks affected by this are 18 to 20, but now if we're saying you have to be within 6 months of having attained your GED, high school graduation, whatever, then you're really not going to get anybody who is much older than 19 or 20. So I'm not sure it's a question for you guys, but it's a concern that I have, you know, about this proposal is there is a huge, you know, because I really feel like it is those chunk of people in their early 20s who fell out after high school for whatever reason, and this doesn't help them at all if you can only do it within 6 months of graduation.
So, Co-Chair,
I realize you're not the advocate,
yeah,
but
we should have the other.
Yes,
these are guys.
Yeah. I'm not sure why we're doing this to them.
Yeah. We would share that concern because our majority of our high school, of our students in community college are over the age of 25, actually. Yeah. And so this is not a program that's designed to help the majority of community college students. To do that would be a very interesting conversation and a very expensive conversation, but might be one worth having in the future.
Yeah. Senator Roblin.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I guess I would say that mm-hmm. those of us that are in high school know that if you keep people going, they have a better mm-hmm. chance of finishing. And we recognize there's this other group that needs to be addressed, but that's not what this bill does, and I feel pretty clear about that. And not saying that we shouldn't do more, and we had a conversation a little bit about that yesterday when we talked about the YDD budget, Youth Development Commission, YDC. And we really need to start figuring out how to target those in ways that we get them engaged, because that's going to take more outreach, more other kinds of things than this bill. But the other part is that this is last dollar in, and mm-hmm. people need to understand that there's a lot of community colleges out there who offer scholarships, full tuition, for kids that have done academically well and other reasons. So almost every community college out there has been trying to address this issue for years about how do we make access to people. And so they have sports ones, they have academic ones, they have a lot of stuff that their foundations and their other people at their schools are investing in these kids already. We're hoping that that will continue. This means that there will be more money for others. Then there are many high schools, and I can only speak from my county because that's the one I've worked in the most, but most of the schools in my county have their own foundations giving scholarships to kids as well. And so the hope and the assumption is, from a lot of us that see this as a, and I appreciate the work that was done that put it through OSAC, because OSAC helps us organize all this stuff. So you're going to also have those communities that like ours that have a couple million dollars in a foundation that we can give out money, basically, in our particular case, Marshfield High School, where I was at, about half of it goes to academic programs, half of it goes to vocational programs, all of which happen to be at community colleges. So we, I know, intend to continue to do that because we want our individual kids to understand that our individual community cares about them and wants them to be successful and go on. So, and we found that that makes a difference too. Getting it from one place or another place sometimes makes a difference with the ability for those kids to persist because someone believes in me who from my local community invested in this money. So what I'm hoping will happen in this is that we have a year to organize, we have a year to figure out what rules and best way to do it, and then we have a year to implement as we come into the next full session to decide, is it working? Where are the gaps? Where are the other kinds of things? Yeah. Because the reality in the, at the end, if we want to get to 40-40-20, which I hear that some people aren't sure we can make, and I could be one of those as well, and maybe the 40-40-20 isn't right. Maybe it should be 60 in the middle. I whatever that is, maybe we can start then assessing how this did, what other resources are available, how many more Pell Grants we got, all of those kinds of things, and then start looking at the adjustment. Because if you use your Pell up all in community college, it doesn't help you get to the finish in the 4 years. So can we supplement some of those so that, you know, even though it's last dollar in, we say, you know, you have to use this much Pell and we're going to give you an amount of money to supplement books or other kinds of things so you don't have to use it all up. So you, if you are aspiring to that bachelor's degree, you're going to have money available when you get there. So there's a lot of things to discuss and figure out to make this really work for all Oregonian kids. But if you don't get started and you don't set some parameters and work it, you can't get there. So I really think that, and I really appreciate what the community college has done over the last few weeks in trying to answer those questions, because I think those are really at the heart. And having it in OSAC, having it in HEC, really important, because they're the group that's really been working. You couple this with Aspire, you couple it with some other things, and all of a sudden we start developing that program that Representative Huffman is talking about. And I am pleased that we're moving in that direction.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the adult learners, we're trying to deal with that more in the Oregon Workforce Investment Board and local workforce boards, and community colleges are represented on the OWIB. And so we're trying to deal with skilling up apprenticeships, community college, TANF, you know, Aaron Kelly Seals, part of OWIB. And so we're trying to deal with the adult learners more from the workforce angle.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Thank you, John. Mr. Cannon, you want to come up and see if there's questions for you? You're going to be making some of the rules during the next few months that will apply when this kicks in the fall of 16. And so have you thought this through? What kind of sideboards are you planning? Because as Representative Springer said, $10 million just doesn't go as far as it used to.
Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, for the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the HEC. So we have only begun to think through what additional sideboards we might employ. We appreciate that the bill does permit the commission to allocate the dollars in a potentially in a targeted way, and the reference to a potential preference to persons enrolled in school districts or high schools that meet specified criteria that we would establish, we think could be a mechanism for targeting the students who would benefit from this bill, given that $10 million is unlikely to satisfy the entire demand from students who meet the statutory criteria of the 2.5 GPA, of being a recent high school graduate, and of enrolling in certain kinds of community college courses. So we appreciate the flexibility and the ability to target, but have not had not engaged our commission or even our staff to a significant extent in a discussion yet of precisely how we would design that. For the record, our commission and our agency is officially neutral on this bill. Do think the amendments have made it more workable both for colleges and for the state administration. The only other note that I would insert, or I guess there are two, but also on page four of the amendments, There is a reference to the ability of the commission to implement programs or policies that improve the academic success or completion rates for persons who receive a grant under this section. We believe this would permit the commission to identify and even establish potential eligibility or continuation requirements for students that help for their participation potentially in programs or initiatives that help increase their likelihood of success. We think that's an important provision of the bill. Finally, I would note that the fiscal statement for the bill indicates that this would have a 2017-19 cost of $10 million. Given that we're putting all $10 million in the second year of this biennium, that suggests, and the fiscal analysis states this, that the dollar per year going in the 17-19 biennium would actually be less than in the 16-17 school year. So while we have a targeting issue for 16-17, under this fiscal analysis, we would have additional constriction, tightening of resources in the 17-19. I know you're not making those 17-19 decisions today, but it may be relevant as we start to build the budget for 17-19, and this presumes just a $10 million biennial impact for that biennium.
So if we maintained it at the same level, it'd be 20 million instead of 10.
Correct.
Basically. Correct. Questions for Mr. Cannon, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And so as I look at the notes here, the 10 million, of course, and then four positions for this biennium, which is just shy, 1.93 FTE, which is kind of a different number. So obviously there's some creativity that's being done there. So we're adding some positions and some costs there that may or may not be a good thing, and that's for each person to decide. I'm wondering, what was the conversation and around putting additional funds in the opportunity grant that's already established and has a framework?
So Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Springer, the commission's discussion about weighing additional opportunity grant dollars versus free community college versus other initiatives designed to improve affordability really took place, began over a year ago, and culminated in our reports to you last fall on free community college and on Pay It Forward and on the opportunity grant. And as you may recall from our prior presentations to this subcommittee, the commission's recommendation was that we focus new state resources on expanding the opportunity grant as a highly effective way at targeting state dollars to students, whether they're attending community colleges, public universities, certain private colleges in the state, based on need and other criteria. We appreciate the legislature's decision to significantly increase resources for the opportunity grant and understand the interest in finding other ways of addressing affordability and addressing it for some portions of the population that don't qualify for opportunity grants. And clearly, many of the beneficiaries of the free community college or this community college waiver program would be students who are not eligible for opportunity grants. So it is clear that the legislature, like the commission, has an interest in supporting all students, unfortunately has limited dollars to do so. When we faced that dilemma as a commission, we said, well, let's really focus on this existing successful program. And that's reflected, I think, in our sort of neutrality about this proposal.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood something you just said. You said students who, with the Dash 11 with this bill, would most likely not qualify for the Oregon Opportunity Grant? Did I mishear you, maybe?
Representative Taylor, Mr. Co-Chair, so this proposal, these Dash 11s, are neutral as to student need. So there will be many students who benefit from this program who receive opportunity grants and Pell Grants. Likewise, students who don't receive opportunity grants and Pell Grants will be equally able to benefit from this program under the Dash 11s as written and still subject to additional rulemaking by the HEC. From a fiscal sort of where the dollars go standpoint, those Pell Grant and opportunity grant recipients will be at the lower end of the dollars received under this. They'll likely qualify for the $1,000 minimum Students who don't receive opportunity grants or Pell Grants to offset their tuition will qualify for higher, larger tuition waivers from OSAC and the HEC under this bill.
Go ahead.
Follow up. Thank you, Co-Chairman Rowe. So the in the FAFSA application process, will there be do you anticipate, I'm so glad that they're having you do this, because I'm sure you'll do a great job, Ben, and you'll figure it all out, but are you going to be figuring out some sort of trigger mechanism so that if they're over time, it appears that a certain number of students are not qualifying for the FAFSA, not receiving money through after they submit the FAFSA application, that maybe a trigger goes off and we say, hey, you know, it's the kids that are not low income are from low-income families are not the ones receiving the tuition waiver. Is there going to be some sort of look? Are you going to be looking at more? Ideally, what we would want is the students to apply for the FAFSA, and for those who did not, who if you qualified and you got the money from FAFSA, then that would benefit the state. The community colleges would have more money, and that would make sense. But then, if you didn't receive money through FAFSA because apparently your family supposedly can afford it, then would there be, you know, kind of two different paths? It would seem logical to me that we would look at those two different populations differently. Will you be able to do anything about that in the rulemaking process? Or?
Representative Taylor, Co-Chair Monroe, we certainly will have the ability to evaluate how dollars provided for under this bill are impacting students or flowing to students at different levels of need as determined by the FAFSA. The way I understand this bill and this proposal, however, is that the commission will not be creating means-based thresholds, will not be treating students differently of different means. So our targeting, it does indicate that we could target on the basis of high school or school district or potentially other mechanisms. I think it's unlikely that the HEC would interpret this bill to mean that we could target based on income level. Then, in fact, what we're doing is ensuring that students who enroll in this program and benefit from this program at whatever income level receive the size of the grant necessary, at least $1,000, and potentially higher if you didn't qualify for Pell or opportunity grant, potentially significantly higher, to offset the cost of community college tuition.
Thank you for clarifying.
Senator Roblin, and first, then we're going to have to move on.
I'll just say a quick one on that one. I think there are a lot of parents out there and families who go through the whole process, and then they find out that the government has decided that they make enough money that they aren't going to get any help. And many of those at the bottom end of that need as much help as anybody else. It's just that's where the arbitrary line was done. Mm-hmm. This bill gives an opportunity for those people to feel that their kids have a chance. And then there's another population of kids out there whose parents said, we had an obligation to raise you till you're 18. When you're 18, you're out of the house. We have kids every year who turn 18 while they're in the senior in high school, and they're out of the house. And they may have a lot of money. They have made a decision in their families that's the parents' responsibility. And so You still have to fill a FAFSA based on your family's income at that point, because that's the last year, even though you have no income. And it was very hard for us to figure out at schools how to help target those kids and get them resources necessary for them to go on to school. It was hard for some of us to understand that, but there are strong family beliefs that that's what it is. And so they say, you want to go on to community college? I didn't go on to community college. You go on to community college, but you're paying every penny of it. And I'm saying this bill kind of meets a need of a group of kids who, when that happens to them in their lives, see this is still an opportunity as opposed to, it's over for me. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. We appreciate your input. Madam Co-Chair, a motion on the Dash 11 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the Dash 11 amendments to Senate Bill 81.
Further discussion? Any objections to the motion? Representative Springer objects. Any other objections? Motion carried.
Mr. Co-Chair. Yes, I move Senate Bill 81 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Objections to the motion. Okay, Representative Smith Warner objects. Representative Springer objects. Any other objections? Senator Thompson objects. I can't give you to carry it if you object, you know.
I've already got two. I'm okay. Overloaded.
The motion carried. And Senator Roblin to the full and to the Senate. And Representative Johnson back there to the House. Would that be?
Johnson,
yeah. Is that okay? I think Hass would be good to the Senate.
You want me to let Hass carry it to the Senate? Okay. Yeah. Roblin to.
Senator.
Okay. Roblin to full Ways and Means, and Hass to the Senate, and Johnson to the House. Close work session on 81.
418.
418. Open a work session on 418.
That's good. I love having you here.
I'm not here for any reason. I'm just here.
You can join us anytime.
You can sit in for Huffman now.
Well, is this our final evaluation?
Probably.
I'm not voting. I'm just observing. So.
Performance evaluation.
That's right.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Wilson.
Senate Bill 418, in its original version, appropriated money for an accelerated credit, college credit account, and it also required each high school to offer 9th and 12th graders accelerated credit programs. The amendment, the A24 amendment, replaces the bill and establishes two, for lack of a better term, work groups. The first group would work on the bill, on issues around the bill you just passed, Senate Bill 81, and identify methods for improving success rates and educational outcomes for those students who receive the waivers. The group is also instructed to emphasize on support services, something that Ms. Henderson mentioned in her testimony on the previous bill. That report, a report is required to the legislature on those findings of that group no later than February 1, 2016, in time for the 2016 session. Additionally, the second group, which is really a conglomeration of HEC, OEIB, Department of Education, and whatever others are appointed or brought into the group, is charged with recommending ways to encourage students to become ready for college, take courses for college credit, and make transition from high school to post-secondary education. The group should also take into account how high schools and post-secondary institutions share the cost in this area, potential funding preferences, increasing the access to counselors and to support participation, and other factors that are listed in the bill. This work group also is to produce a report. HEC is responsible for it to the legislature again by February 1, 2016, in time for the 2016 session. There is a special appropriation to the Emergency Board of $6.865 million for implementing the recommendations of the work group, mainly the second group. And then HEC also has $134,079 in it for staffing and the costs of the two work groups. As my memo states, there's an A24 amendment, which is what I just discussed. There is also, and Mr. Huffman is, or Representative Huffman stepped out, there's a dash 22 amendments that we also posted this morning, which deals with a separate issue dealing with residential or frontier residential schools. And I'm not an expert on this. Mr. Martin is here, if he would like to present that, or Representative Huffman, who brought it forward to the co-chairs and the chiefs.
Okay, we'll briefly hear from.
And as Mr. Martin comes up, the dash 22s are an amendment to the bill. What we'll do, if you accept the concept of what Mr. Martin, which is the 22s, present, we will meld both amendments into one for the full committee and make sure that they do match each other.
Okay. Mr. Martin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Justin Martin, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Small Schools Association. A special thanks to Representative Huffman for bringing this amendment to this committee. As you know, we passed this, you passed this last session on to full Ways and Means, and we just appreciate the opportunity again on behalf of those frontier schools, as you called them, Burnt River, Paisley, Spray, Mitchell, Ukiah, really the smallest of the small, to approve this funding for yet another 2 years. Hopefully we will have the discussions during the interim, come up with some solutions for those schools. But in the meantime, thank you so much, and we urge passage of the A22 amendments. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Martin? Senator Roblin.
So does that appropriate out of the $6.578 million the money to pay for these, or is this from a different source?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, I believe it's from a different source. State.
Mr. Wilson.
I have not had time to review the amendment in detail, so I'll be honest with you on that one.
Oh, we can find out later.
We will.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Martin? Justin, thank you very much. So should we take the 24 first?
Or? I would suggest taking the 22s first, and it's 22. A concept amendment.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair, on the dash 22 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the dash 22 concept amendments to Senate Bill 418.
Additional discussion? Any objections? And now, Madam Co-Chair, on the 24.
Of course. Yes, Senator, I move the dash 24 amendment to Senate Bill 418.
Questions on that? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As I look at this amendment on page one, or page two, I hit the button. It talks about who is on the task force, the work group. And it says here, the work group convened under the section must include the chief education officer, a representative of the Department of Education, representative of the department, and other education stakeholders. That strikes me as pretty different than language we typically use, which is to specify some areas. And I'm just wondering why the broad nature of that language.
Mr. Wilson, can you help us any?
I think that the drafter was instructed to be all-inclusive in terms of the potential, is my guess on that.
I would bring Mark up.
Representative Huffman?
I would bring Mark Johnson up, the answer man in the group.
Representative Johnson, welcome.
What amendment are we looking at?
The 24.
And we're working on the 24-24 amendment. And Representative Huffman, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Springers.
Oh.
Committee, Mark Johnson, House District 52. And the question was, why the broad nature of the language? I think it's intentionally thus. As we get to this part in time and session, sometimes we can hurry up and try to cobble something together and end up perhaps having to undo it later on. I think we left it intentionally non-prescriptive, putting the right people involved in the process so that they'll have time to put this proposal together, put the sideboards, as we talk about, on it, and regarding the student populations that could be targeted by this investment. But there, again, there's time that you recognize in the language, too. There's an allocation to the e-board, who will be actually disbursing this money later when this plan comes back fully put together. So rather than kind of rush to make a bad decision, the intent here was to take the time, do it right, get all the stakeholders together so we can implement this in a way that's going to be effective. So thank you for the question.
Representative Springer.
Thank you. Follow up on that. Thank you for that part. And as I go through here, I haven't found yet or been able to identify any part of the language that specifies a number on that group. So the broad nature of that makeup could be anybody that wanted to participate. Is that correct? Because I'm not seeing minimums and maximums and the typical language that that I see usually.
Representative Springer, it is a work group, not a task force, so by nature it's a little less, I think, descriptive. I would say, sure, this is the kind of effort that I think is really targeted to try to get at identifying those barriers, building bridges between K-12 and post-secondary. But I think as we've learned in the past regarding some of the benefits of the fifth-year programs and what are those things that those districts are doing, I'd love to have those. It would be great to have those districts come out and tell us exactly what's working well and how might we replicate that on a sustainable statewide basis. That would be the hoped-for outcome of this, because this investment is really targeted towards trying to replicate some of those support services and wraparound services that we hear from those districts that are able to garner and take advantage of that fifth-year program. This is what they like, so we'd love to have them be a part of this process so we could try to design something that could be, again, sustainable and available statewide, not just in a few targeted school districts.
Follow up.
Thank you. So I initially thought that this was fairly narrowly focused on the accelerated programs, but you just mentioned fifth year, so now I'm wondering what is the role of this work group for the fifth year conversation? I thought these were separate conversations.
Representative Springer and co-chairs, I would not say that this is exclusively about fifth year, but the original base bill was about dual accreditation, accelerated learning. That's not in the language anymore. It's pretty clear here, I guess, as you look at page two and so forth. You know, part of the charge here is to develop recommendations described allocating how high schools, post-secondary institutions can share costs and funding for transitioning from high school to post-secondary. How they can increase capacity of high schools, post-secondary institutions, provide counseling, advisors, all those sort of wraparound services that I think we happen to find in fifth-year programs, but I'm not saying that what this would be would have to be a model for the current existing fifth-year programs. But, again, this all kind of comes out of, again, it's a natural fit with the bill that you just passed, Senate Bill 81, where we're going to have more students coming into the system, but we want to make sure they're cared for and that there are those kind of supports and counseling services and mentorships available for them. So this is a relatively meager investment, but at least it's a start, and it's a start that actually has some dollars attached to it.
Go ahead.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. So I was under the impression from earlier testimony a couple, 3 weeks ago when we were talking about fifth-year programs that there's going to be a separate work group working on that. So we have that work group working on fifth years, and then we have this work group that's also going to talk about fifth years, so we might get a couple recommendations.
The next bill is 898.
898 will deal with that issue.
Correct.
Okay. So we'll take it up when we finish with this one. Senator Roblin.
Am I missing? Because I can't find the place that talks about the money that's going to go to these schools that are out in the...
I did not get time. I'm looking through the amendment, and I have
this amendment was first talked about, it was about getting money to those schools that are the, what'd you call them?
Frontier
schools?
Oh, that's not my amendment.
The other amendment.
No, that's 22.
That was the other one.
Dash 22 amendment.
Is that one.
Yeah. We're on the 24 now.
This is the 24, the bigger one.
We just had to find a vehicle for the dash 22.
Okay. Okay. I'm good then. I'm fine. Okay. I don't have any real questions about this. I hope that the two work groups, if that's part of what we're having here, don't conflict with each other, because that would be a very big frustration to me. And I don't know that we need those. I think that we will have a conversation that changes what happens. I do believe that part of the conversation here in the free community colleges directly relates to the conversation that will happen in the other bill. I get nervous about putting the two, having two work groups that don't necessarily come out. I agree with you completely on that. That frustrates me a bit.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to happen. Given the agreements on 898, I think that will not occur. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couldn't agree more with my work on the Accelerated Learning Task Force and then evolving with some of those members, Senator Haas and others. You can't, in my opinion, and I've said it all session, you can't disconnect fifth, and we'd say fifth year. We're really talking fifth plus year programs. Right. We're talking 5, 6, 7, and 8 year programs, as we heard from Deputy Director Saxton. You can't disconnect that, or it'd be really ridiculous to disconnect that conversation from this conversation. because we have to have alignment. And so I've been involved in this conversation a whole lot more. The agreement that was made in the last couple of weeks on a work group out of 898 is definitely the latecomer, and it's more targeted toward the fifth plus year program. And I'm just, it was a bone that was thrown out there. I'm just going to call it what it is to get some stuff going. But I think the effort needs to be behind one work group that really looks comprehensively.
Okay. Anything else for Representative Johnson?
That's politically correct.
Thanks.
It's not necessarily for him. It's just I just want to make a couple comments on that.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mark.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In addition to what Representative Springer said about the makeup of the work group, I just wanted to say for the record that I hope that we do plan that education stakeholders ends up meaning a variety of on-the-ground folks who are doing this, you know, reps from whether it's the teachers, administrators. I just want to be clear that is our legislative intent of this. And then number two, to make sure... On the second part where we talk about the dual learning, I just want to make sure that indeed that the board knows that our goal is to not only talk about dual credit stuff that happens in high school, but also in the colleges themselves. Because as somebody, I in my senior year went and took, they did it as an experiment because my dad actually taught at a local college. So I was the guinea pig my senior year, and I traveled to that college and took two classes a semester on campus, and they kind of did it to see how the logistics would work out, and that was very valuable. So just to be clear that we're talking about both dual credit that you get in the high school and also going to the community college as well.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, but I'm also very careful to point out that we're not just talking about dual enrollment, dual credit. We're also talking about advanced placement, international baccalaureate, you know, all things that could be included in that. So I want to be careful and make sure that we're talking about all of that. But to that, that's why OEIB will be taking a key lead point on that, because as we heard, some of the questions asked throughout this session have been targeted specifically to get things on the record. What's the purpose of OEIB? And a big part of that, as was testified to by Rob and Nancy, is that alignment. They are the entity to help create that alignment that I've been begging for years between high school or K-12 and community colleges higher ed, so that they're communicating and talking, so that hopefully we end up with a more streamlined process where we have less need for remedial classes getting to community colleges and so on. The benefits should be there at the end.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair.
Just a final comment before we vote on this, Mr. Co-Chair. I think one of the most important lines in this amendment is that there will be a report February 1st, 2016 to the policy committees because without a doubt, this Ways and Means Committee has ventured into deep land of policy on these couple of bills that were being heard. And so it is imperative and appreciative that we do have the report back to the policy committee so that these things do have multiple eyes looking at them rather than a budget committee.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Roblin.
I just need a clarification on these, on all these amendments. So we already passed one amendment.
We passed the 22.
And was that the one that was arranged through the work group that's been working on it for a long time? Was that our?
No.
That's the 24.
No. That's the one we're voting on now.
Can I address the 22?
No.
Really quick.
Representative Hoffman.
Senator Haas keeps me on a very short leash on the frontier schools.
Okay.
And so every lengthy session, we have to come in and renew that just for those 48 students.
I'm happy with that. That's all that did.
That's all that did.
And the new one, because we've had a big group that's been working on the SPA. Is there, what amendment is that one?
That's the 24.
That's the one before us right now.
That's right now.
Okay.
Okay. The motion is on the -24 amendment. Additional discussion, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For purposes today, I'm going to be no on the dash 24s. I know I just supported the 22s, and let me explain why. The 22s are not new language. That's the same issue that comes up every 2 years. That's been through policy committees. I have no idea how many times. That's a very well-vetted issue. I'm no on the 24s because we're doing deep policy right now. And I sit on a policy committee, and so I feel equipped to do policy. That said, this is a budget committee, and the vetting that needs to occur through through a policy committee is just can't have the depth here by the very nature. And we're late in the session, moving quickly. So for that point, I'm going to be a no on this. I may end up a yes on the floor when I have more time to go through this and answer the questions that I'm sitting here wondering and not seeing people in the room that I would need to direct those to.
That's one of the reasons why I like having the chair of the Senate Policy Committee on this subcommittee. It's very helpful for the continuity. So it's always a blurred line between, you know, what's policy and what's funding, and it always will be. And I, in the past, have served on both the Ways and Means and the Policy Committee, and found it kind of interesting. Senator Rowland?
May I follow up on that, Mr. Chair?
Pardon?
Co-chair? May I follow up on that, please?
Sure. Go ahead.
And I totally appreciate those points. Maybe I don't think I was very clear. This is about time, mm-hmm. having the vetting and the discussion and the public comment.
And we're running out of time.
Yep.
Senator Rowland?
And you know, there's been a lot of work done on this, and I know that I want to make sure that we have a real conversation on the next on the 898 and try to come up with something. If we can blend that back in once we get it, because I think they are all talking about the same thing. How do we get kids in the right place to do the right thing? And I don't want competing ones. I think there has to be a connection if they're actually going to have that conversation there. There's another conversation that I feel really strongly about, and that's how to use this spa that we're developing in this amendment to help make sure that the bill we just passed, 81, works, that makes sure that we have continued conversations. And, in fact, outside of this, we put a little extra money in the budgets that we had before for people taking tests and IB and other things, and I think that was important because we need to keep those all of those conversations happening about how we move forward and give kids as many opportunities as we can to earn college credit when they're ready to do it. And to Smith Warner, who took classes early,
we have some upset members about what was just said.
In our family, we had a daughter who's now a playwright who really liked to write, and the community college allowed her to take a class when she was in middle school. And she did very well in the class. So, and it was a writing course. Community colleges have been very good about, if you meet the requirements and you can come in there and do the work, we're going to let you come and take it. And I appreciate that. And that one, I think, from the community college standpoint, is always available. Kids who can come in and show that they're ready to do it and understand can sign up for these courses. And I think that's in most of those places. But they want to make sure that the student is ready to take the course and not be a burden or cause more effort than they would have to for a regular college student. So I absolutely agree that that's part of the whole conversation.
Okay, the motion is on the dash 24 amendment. Further discussion, objections to the dash 24 amendment, Representative Springer. Any other objections? Dash 24 amendment is carried. Madam Co-Chair on 418.
This is where we need to recess.
Before we vote on 418.
Yes.
We're in recess until 10 minutes still. At the
voting yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, thank you for coming back. I think one of the two or both the full committee co-chairs have sat in mainly just to clear up some issues, I think.
Okay, the motion before us is on 418. We've already adopted the dash 22 amendment. The motion is, and we've adopted the dash 24 amendment, but we haven't passed the final bill. So
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Members of the committee, we just, Senator Devlin, I just wanted to come in because we've been listening to the testimony and to clarify the intent, our intent in working on these bills with you is not to set up a work group to end fifth-year programs that for districts that have fifth-year programs that benefit kids. That's part of the discussion. I'm sure that will happen in terms of what is a quality fifth-year program or why students might need to stay for an extra year if they had problems with dropping out earlier or have family problems, whatever might get in their way of graduating in 4 years. There's no intention to end any program that truly benefits students. The discussion on accelerated learning focuses on the student population that can excel through accelerated learning, and those are programs I think we all support. But we also want to make clear we support the programs that benefit children, students who might not be on track to graduate in 4 years as well. So we just want to get that on the record. The work group that's envisioned is a broad work group on issues, but the focus is to benefit our students.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. I would just like to concur with the comments of my House co-chair, and only to add to that the work group that is conceived in this has a broad charge, but I think both of us see one of its principal charges, its core charge in a sense, at least for the short term, is being to look at, I think some of you know, that we will have a special purpose appropriation in the budget that will try to address some of the needs for accelerated learning in the second school year of this coming biennium. And while some of the existing programs, and I'm not even speaking to fifth year here, I'm speaking to things like AP and others are going to continue throughout the biennium, there was a discussion about delaying how we implement the additional money we've set aside for accelerated learning to the second year, and that's specifically why you have this work group in this bill. Now, they may discuss some broader issues, but that's the work product that we're expecting, because when we come back in February, our intention is to actually appropriate those funds for the second school year of this biennium.
Yep. Okay. That was my understanding as well. Any further discussion? Okay, we ready to... Yeah,
discussion?
Representative
Springer. We're on the bill, right?
Yeah.
18 as amended.
Bills like this really bug me, and I'll tell you why. I love the Frontier School concept and voted yes on that amendment. And I voted no on the other. And I still think, I mean, I'm just going by what's on record, that there were some pretty direct statements on record on both sides, I guess, of that issue, you might say. I'm going to make a really, really hard yes vote on this because I cannot sacrifice Frontier Schools. I can't. Painful vote that I don't like, but that's okay. That's what we do in the legislature. We take hard votes. So anyway, I will be supporting this not because I'm thrilled with the Dash 24s, but because I'm thrilled with kids in very rural parts of our state.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I believe I didn't get to finish the motion.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair, the motion on 418 as amended.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 418 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, and the amendment is the Dash 22 and the Dash 24.
Yes.
Okay, additional discussion?
So I feel very strongly about 418 and moving forward to figure out ways which we can help all kids in Oregon become better and make it in college. So I'm clearly there. I am concerned because I am also really clear that 898 has a purpose and a place, and it's a work group that we really have to help a bunch of schools who did, in their kids' opinion, make programs that helped a group of kids and improved graduation rates and did all the things that we're talking about doing in the other field. And I need to hear from them and figure out what the best parts of those are and make sure that that has a real open plan that delivers some stuff back to here so we understand, because I think that everybody understands that we want to make sure that we take the best of things that help kids perform and go to college and put them all together. So, but they're both really, really important, and I don't think one trumps the other. It's just that we need to recognize that both of these things are really important for us to get a handle on where we want to go in the future with respect to these all these programs. So with that, I'll be a yes as well.
Okay, the motion is on 418 as amended. Objections to the motion? Seeing none. And Senator Roblin, you want to carry this one?
I'd be glad to, actually. You could also do...
Oh, Senator Edwards also. Has he worked on this? He was the original.
No.
No? Okay.
I don't think so.
But it got moved into a different bill, so Haas would be there. Haas might be the one that would like to do it, so I'd say Haas.
Okay. Senator Roblin to the full Ways and Means, Senator Haas to the Senate floor, and Madam
Johnson.
Co-Chair,
Rep Johnson
to the House floor. 418 is done. Now, we have one more bill that we need to do, and that's 898, and dealing with the fifth year program. I'll open a work session on 898. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, there is a dash A2 amendment to this. In the current form, 898 had grants into it up to $150 million carved out from the state school fund for grant programs for smaller districts. This amendment, the E2, replaces the language with language relating to the fifth year program. This is just the fifth year program, and I think everyone understands that concept, so don't need to go into the detail. The language in the amendment restricts districts from having it continues the fifth year concept for only those districts that have had them in the past school year. No new districts can come on, is my understanding, and then for a 1 year sort of hold steady, and then the law returns back to the current law after the 15-16 school year. And I believe it is contemplated, though the bill does not require, that a separate some form of work group will be brought together to discuss this issue and bring back recommendations to the 2016 legislature for the longer term policy around the longer term policy discussion around the fifth year concept programs.
And in my discussions with Senate President Courtney, he made it very clear that rather than have a separate task force, that he would like that task to be carried out by the interim committee.
Thank you.
And whether that would be the Senate interim committee, I assume, or if there's a joint interim committee on education, but it would be the interim committee that already exists, rather than create a new committee. And that the purpose then of that discussion would be to determine the future of these 50-year programs with those districts that currently have them. So 898 puts the sideboards on and says no more. We're not going to add any school districts to the current number that have this 50-year programs. What are the 36 or something like
26.
That?
Sure.
However many school districts that currently have the program. No more, no additional. And then that the interim committee would take up the issue of how to consider the future of those districts that already have these programs, whether those would be phased out in a few years or whatever. There's no speculation necessarily on what happens, but there is concern that since these districts are taking funds out of the common school fund to pay for this 50-year program, that the current situation is probably not sustainable in perpetuity. Senator Roblin.
I'll make a slight clarification. In the amendment, in the section, it says A school district may receive state school fund distribution for students described in Section 1, that's the fifth year of this section, if prior to June 1,
yes.
of this year.
2015, student had enrolled in an educational program offered by the school district.
Yeah.
That might, in fact, include six or seven other kids who had already signed up and worked out a program
in
one school district. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands. There might be a couple more kids who are involved in this that work currently.
Mr. Wilson.
And Mr. Chair, to further clarify as I sped through, it doesn't say you can't have the fifth year program. What it does say is you can't receive state school fund ADM value for the students participating in those. And that is a big difference.
That is a difference.
And it also doesn't mean that other students who have not completed their requirements for graduation and that are also can be continued.
Because we've always had fifth year, just following up. We've always had fifth year programs for those kids that needed a few credits and whatever, and we have, the school districts receive money for them, and we help make it work. Many of them finish all of that in the regular school to get that fifth year, but others get it, you know, may have a community college course or whatever, and we don't want to interfere with that. That's the right thing to do, and it also doesn't interfere with some of our students who have the right to be in school until they're 21.
Under programs.
Yeah.
Okay, does everybody understand that there's an important distinction here? We're, so the sideboards that we're placing on here are only for those students that have already graduated, met their requirements for graduation. So in no way are we saying that some student that flunked his English and his history in his senior year and has to come back for another year to get those, pick up those credits. We used to call them being on the five-year plan when I was in high school and when I was a teacher.
Yep.
And it's perfectly appropriate for state funds to be used for those students that take a little longer to reach their graduation requirements. We're talking about students that are essentially doing college-level work with having met all the requirements for high school graduation, doing college-level work, and charging it to the Common School Fund. Okay? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm really glad that this bill's laying out a conversation, because there needs to be a conversation about the programs and talking about what's working, what's not working, just like anything. This is the path I'd anticipated coming to this committee. This is the language that I was expecting, and part of why I was so conflicted with what I was hearing in 418. So anyway, I will be supporting this. This is a great conversation to have. Enough said.
Yeah, Senator Roblin.
And I will commit to helping with this get organized as already said, Courtney, we had a conversation, really wants this to have a connection to a committee, and the Senate Education Committee will put this as part of our interim work group to make sure that we have that support for that as well. If we want to join with the House, I would be glad to have that conversation too. But for certain on the record, I will work with Representative Springer, Representative Gelser, and others to make sure that we have a real open conversation to get good information back.
Okay. Anything else on this? Madam Co-Chair.
With one correction to Senator Roblin's comment, it's Senator Gelser.
Yes, you did say Representative.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yes,
and I do that from time to time in my meetings.
I move that the Dash A2 amendments be added to Senate Bill 898.
Okay, heard the motion. Further discussion? Any objections to the motion? Madam Co-Chair.
I move that Senate Bill 898 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Any objections to that motion? 898 is on its way to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, and we need carriers.
From my my perspective, I think I would be glad to take it to the full. I think we should offer Senator Gelser the opportunity to carry it on the Senate floor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator, she's not on the full Ways and Means, so Senator Roblin will carry it to full Ways and Means. Senator Gelser on the Senate floor, and Madam Co-Chair?
I'll carry it on the House floor.
And Madam Co-Chair will carry it on the House floor. Anything further? See you all next Tuesday at 9 o'clock for our little party, and we're adjourned.